ABC Listen.
So can you read cursive? I don't mean just linked letters. I mean proper, authentic cursive writing that you see in old historical journals. It's a superpower. Apparently very hard to do. Earlier this year, the National Archives in the US put out a call looking for people who could decipher historical documents which were written in cursive handwriting. Now, that suggests there might not be many people who practice and understand cursive handwriting around anymore. Is it a dying art? Are we losing it to time? If so, is there a good reason to lose it, or is it worth hanging on to? Misty Adinu is Associate Professor in Language and Literacy at the University of Canberra. Misty has some notes on the subject, but are they handwritten or typed? Let's find out. Hi, Misty. Thanks for joining us here on Nightlife tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So what are some of the reasons people advocate for the importance of cursive handwriting?
Well, people who like cursive handwriting really like cursive handwriting, and it's usually because they're quite good at cursive handwriting themselves. I think there's probably a thing we should sort out first up. When people talk about writing, so they say, oh, you've got great writing, do they mean that they like the look of your writing, or do they mean that they like the substance of your writing? So two different things, right? Also, cursive writing is different from printing, but they're both handwriting. So I think we're talking about handwriting, and it is important, for example, that kids learn handwriting at school, but there's not much evidence for why they should learn cursive writing at school.
So cursive was most used during the 18th and 19th century. Can you take us through why that was and how it reflected what was going on at the time?
So all writing types that we have are a function of the technology that we have at the time. So the technology of that time was the fountain pen and ink, even the quill and ink. And so if you think about that, especially the quill, the ink is constantly running from the quill, from the nib. And so you've got to keep your nib on the piece of paper moving. Otherwise, there's going to be blotches everywhere. And that leads us to cursive writing. So as soon as we don't have that constant run of ink, the ballpoint pen, for example, stopped that, then we don't really need to have cursive writing anymore.
So it was just all about using all that flowing ink as it flowed and not making a mess.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's also very beautiful. It's very attractive, right? So really the word we use for cursive writing is calligraphy, which is a beautiful Greek word, kali meaning beautiful and graphy meaning writing. So it's also very beautiful. And so one of the reasons probably that the National Archives in the United States is making a call out for people to read the cursive writing is that people have their idiosyncratic style of cursive writing as well. And so you never know how somebody might put an extra flip or a loop on a letter on the end of a word, all of which makes it a little harder to decipher 150 years later.
So, look, how does this idea that the way we write is linked to what's going on historically, how does that compare? Can we take that back further in history and look at the ways that we've written and the technology that was available?
We definitely can. So if we go right back to when we really have first good recorded writing. And so there's a lot of, if anybody's been to Greece and they've walked around the ancient sites and they've seen a lot of writing on all of those marble buildings, on those marble stone, those marble monuments over there, and they'll have noticed that that writing is really angular. It's straight up and down or triangular even, and that's a function of the technology, right? So they're writing on stone and they're having to do it through carving. So they've got a chisel and a hammer, and that gives you that style of writing. That's why the letters look that way. So all the way through we can trace the way we write is a function of the technology we have at the time for writing. And now the technology we have is the computer. And so now we have, I don't know, hundreds of fonts we could choose from to be the way we write.
You're on Nightlife on ABC Radio. Misty Adino is my guest, Associate Professor in Language and Literacy at TESL at the University of Canberra. So handwriting then is still important, whether it's cursive or whether it is, well, print, is that the word you would use for handwriting otherwise, or would you just refer to that as handwriting?
That's print. So we'll call that printing.
Okay.
Other cursive.
I mean, that's a skill we still need to have. I mean, that mega blackout that hit Spain and Portugal this week shows that you can't always be relying on your technology to write for you.
Exactly. You never know when you just need to find a pencil and write a note. So you do need to know how to handle a pen or a pencil and just handwrite. You don't necessarily have to cursive write, but you do need to know how to print. And that's particularly important for young children learning to write, as in compose, you know, creative pieces of writing at school, because everything about writing a creative piece takes up a lot of your working memory. You have to think of an idea. You have to think of how you might put that down on a piece of paper. What order should the words go in? How are those words spelled? All of those things take up a lot of memory. And so does putting those letters on a page and knowing where to start the circle and where to put the line going down. So the more automatic you can make that part of the writing process, the more automatic you can make the handwriting, printing part of the process, the more you open up your working memory to be able to actually write a brilliant story. So we're trying to make that's why our children still learn handwriting at school. We're trying to make it as automatic as possible. The aim being that by the time they're about 9 or 10, so year 3, year 4, it should be automatic, their actual ability to print, so that they've got much more room in their brain to think of wonderful stories to write.
Mm. Now, tell us about NAPLAN testing and the transition to digital writing in schools and what it tells you about how handwriting performs compared to typed answers in these kinds of tests.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I haven't really done any formal studies on this, but when we... So NAPLAN we do in year 3, year 5, year 7 and year 9, and the students have to do a writing test. And by that I mean not a handwriting test, I mean a creative writing or sometimes a persuasive piece of writing that they have to do. Up until a few years ago, everybody had to do that in handwriting. So they had to get a pen or a pencil and write it on a piece of paper. A couple of years ago, it went kind of hybrid. So some schools typed their stories and some schools were still handwriting their stories. Now it's gone to fully online, so everybody's able to do theirs online. But what was interesting, while there was some typing and some handwriting, schools were reporting back that the children who were doing theirs online, so typing, were actually scoring better than the students who were handwriting. Now, that kind of seems to go against what you might think. You might think, oh, if I'm handwriting, I'm closer to the paper, closer to the ideas, closer to the creativity. But it may well be that while kids are typing, it's easier for them to go back and change an idea. So it's much easier to delete when you're typing. When you're writing, you think, oh, I've got a better idea, but who wants to rub out everything that I've just said? And so they don't. But when they're typing, it's just like, oh, I could just delete that and come in with a better idea. So that may be one of the reasons why they do better when they go online.
So, Misty, does this mean, though, the same attention that has been paid to teaching cursive and teaching handwriting needs to be paid to teaching typing skills? Because otherwise you end up having people, I mean, you still see, you know, people around who never learnt to type who have to sit down and they're, you know, the one finger trying to figure out where the letters are. That there's we have to be careful we don't create a divide, that all kids are learning to type.
Yeah, exactly, because the same point I made about automatic being able to handwrite automatically without having to think about it, the same principle will apply to the typing when you're online. you'd want it to be automatic so that you weren't spending all of your brain space trying to find the letter T on the keypad and rather thinking about that amazing idea that you'd like to get down on a piece of paper.
I've got Misty Adinu with me here on Nightlife, Senior Lecturer in Language Literacy and TESL at the University of Canberra. Now, a few people just making some comments saying, Glenda says I write in cursive all the time. When written, keeping the rules in front of mind, it's easy on your writing hand. Everyone can read it. It's when people individualise it with flourishes, loops and straight lines that it starts to become illegible and tires the hand. That one from Glenda. This from Jen, kids who use cursive running writing write faster than those who don't, and that can impact on exam performance. I guess that's if you're using handwriting. Is that your experience of it, Misty, that if you use cursive, you can write more quickly, though, than if you are printing?
I don't think so. I don't think that. I've never seen any research that says that you can be speedier when you cursive write. You could be messier the speedier you are, no matter whether you're cursive writing or printing. And that does have an impact on exam performance. Interestingly, so we know from some studies in the United States that when people handwrite their exams and they are messy in their handwriting, or the handwriting is difficult to read, there's a bias on the part of the assessor who see messy writing and have an inherent bias against the content of the writing. So the content may have been excellent, but the messiness gives a bias that marks them down. So whether you print or whether you're cursive, you should work really hard that it's legible.
Lots of my texters also saying that I use cursive and people are always complimenting me on my beautiful handwriting. Is it the place of writing to be beautiful, Misty?
Well, I think so too. So I love cursive writing also, and I'm an excellent cursive writer. I'll let you know, Susan, that I got the Year 5 award for cursive handwriting. So I love it. But as a literacy person, I know that my beautiful cursive writing is more a decorative art and something that people will compliment me on rather than anything that makes me better at literacy, makes my creative writing better, or even my academic journal writing better. It has nothing to do with that. It's just, it's a lovely skill to have. I think it's worthwhile to have in a school curriculum, but probably up in the art class rather than the literacy class.
Now, if you'd like to join in our conversation about cursive writing, the number is 1-300-800-222. You with Suzanne Hill on Nightlife on this Friday night. So instead of the writing then, what do you think should be the focus in literacy?
So what should be the focus in literacy? The focus should be on getting our kids to understand that writing is an amazing gift to humankind and that they should love it. They should love writing stories. They should love getting their ideas down on a piece of paper. They should just enjoy the thrill of the power of being able to put the words you speak on a piece of paper. And I'm really sad when I see kids at school as young as in year three saying, oh, I hate writing. I think that's such a shame. And I wonder what we're doing in schools that kids hate writing. It's such a gift to be able to take the words you speak and put them on a piece of paper so that somebody could read them, even though they maybe lived 1,000 miles away. Or perhaps they even lived 1,000 years away and they'd be able to read the ideas that you had in your head. So writing is such a thrilling, powerful human invention. I'd love that all kids would love that too.
Now, a few people are SMSing about copperplate. How is copperplate different, or is it cursive by another name?
Yeah, cursive by another name. It's a style of cursive writing. Interestingly, so I mean, most states still advocate a cursive writing curriculum. What's very interesting is that they're all different. So you'll learn one particular cursive writing style in Victoria and then another one in Queensland. So there are just lots of different styles of cursive writing.
So, and what is copperplate just one of those?
Yes.
Okay. How would it be different? Could you take, you know, Victoria, New South Wales as an example? How would our cursive look different?
I don't have them right in front of me to see them, but they'll do their joins in different places. They'll do their S's in different places. Some will put loops on their G's, for example, or on their Y's, and others won't. Yeah, they all have a different style, and the styles have changed over time. So clearly cursive writing runs in my family, Suzanne, because my mother also won the handwriting prize when she was at school. And she was in Victoria, and when I look at her cursive writing, it's very different from my cursive writing. So I learnt, mine was called modified cursive writing, and it was taught in Canberra in the 70s. And what my mother learnt was in Victoria in the 50s. Interestingly, my children can read my cursive writing, but they can't read my mother's cursive writing. So long ago she took to printing her Christmas cards to her grandchildren.
Now let's bring Meredith in, who's given us a call from the Hunter Valley. Hey, Meredith.
Oh, good evening. How are you both?
Yeah, well, what do you want to tell us about your writing?
I use small capitals and things like that rather than normal printing or cursive writing. I've done it since I was at school.
And why?
What did your teachers think about that?
I can remember I had a 10,000-word assignment to do, and about like page 8, I realised I'd left a whole section out, and so I just put an asterisk and said, see footnote at end, because I wasn't going to redo the whole thing. But, yeah, my teachers didn't mind because they could at least read it, then they said.
So when you say small capitals, what you... You're writing with the capital letters, but just a smaller scale, as if you were writing in a lowercase.
Yeah, so it's all uppercase, but like if I was starting a sentence, obviously with a capital letter, that's the normal size, but then the rest of the words would be like in a smaller capital print.
And why did you do that, Meredith? Was that just easier for you?
Yeah, I'm dyslexic, and so so that helps. That helped me, and obviously my teachers could read my writing then, and it also helped me because I'd put it down in point form first and then fill in each of the paragraphs around my thoughts. Yeah. But, yeah.
It actually makes a lot of sense what you did, particularly since you say that you were dyslexic, because if you think about it, the uppercase letters are way more differentiated than the lowercase letters. So think of lowercase B and D, which are classic ones for dyslexic learners to muddle, because they just look like a ball with a stick, but you can't quite remember where the stick is. But when you think of the uppercase B and D, they look very different from one another. So they're much easier to differentiate, much easier for a dyslexic child to see the difference between them.
And I just did it without any sort of coaching or anything like that.
Yeah, so that just shows how clever you were.
Yeah, and so, Meredith, how much do you write now? Do you have a job where you have to write a lot?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So yeah. Still working hard? The hand's still working hard then?
Yes, it is, yep. I prefer writing to, I mean, I can type without looking at the keyboard and all of that sort of stuff, but, yeah, if I'm... sending letters. I still send letters and things like that to my friends overseas. We don't email, we send letters. That's really good.
Oh, how lovely. How wonderful it would be to get a proper letter that's not just a bill. Meredith, thank you so much for your call. Let's talk to Kerry in Coffs Harbour. Hello, Kerry.
Hello, Suzanne. How are you?
Yeah, well, what do you want to say about writing and cursing?
Well, this is going back to the 1950s when I learnt to write, and we used to have books where instead of having the lines equal distance apart, they'd have two lines close together. And we learned the alphabet in lowercase with doing it. And then when we got the, like B's and D's where we had a stem, that line for the stem would go up to the bottom of the line above. So we knew the distance that it had to be. And then we went to cursive writing. And that was included. We used to have a spelling class, like a spelling test, and that the teacher would examine us on our writing the words that we had to do for the spelling test. And that was done that way. And then when we went to high school, we used to have inkwells in our desks, and the ink would be supplied by the school, and we used a pen and ink, like a nib and in a pen. And that was our writing that way. And we always had to have blotting paper so that you blotted your work instead of it smudging. And then when we got later on in our school years, probably, say, year 9 and 10, we were allowed to use fountain pens. And then in our last years at high school, we were allowed to use the biros. But I imagine that it was when the biros were first introduced that we were allowed to use them.
But you had a lot of the different technology of writing as you went through, Kerry.
Oh, yes. I've always done cursive writing. Mm. And I did calligraphy when I'd left school and learned how to do more decorative, but it was still using the basics of the cursive writing. It's just that the capital letters tend to have more flourishes. And if your guest there was saying about the D's and that being the written D's, or capital D's, were different to the lowercase D's, because you only had and particularly with the B's, our teacher used to tell us about being, you had a bat, which was your upright stroke, and then the ball in front of it. So it was a bat and ball.
Good way to remember. Hey, Kerry, thank you so much for your call as well. I've got Mr. Yadinu with me, Senior Lecturer in Language Literacy and TESL at the University of Canberra. We're having a yarn about cursive or copperplate or running writing. A lot of you have different words for it. Tony says, is the English language the only language that can be written cursively? Or, Misty, did everybody do this?
No, any of the Latin alphabets, so that's, you know, German and French, anybody who uses an alphabet like ours. In fact, in France, they're definitely the kids learn cursive at school, so they definitely use cursive at school. The other language that I know is Greek, and they don't do a cursive, but it's not a Latin alphabet, so perhaps it doesn't lend itself to it. But definitely in France, I know they're very keen on cursive writing at school.
Now, Colin says, for a number of decades, the only cursive writing that I could do is my signature. Now, there's something about doing a signature, Misty, though. You kind of want to do a flourish and use the cursive or something that feels like cursive, don't you?
Well, and you want, yes, you do, and you want something that's not easily copied. So the more incomprehensible you can make it, the better, probably. I have to say, every time I sign mine, because mine is that good old fifth grade modified cursive, and people are always looking at it saying, wow, you write like a teacher. So I'm clearly not individual enough.
So what's modified cursive then?
Well, it was that was the cursive that came in the 70s that got rid of a lot of those flourishes that people are remembering from the copperplate. So it just made it a simplified cursive. And it's mostly that kind of cursive that kids still learn in school today. And interesting, as we heard your listener make her way through all of the technologies, you know, getting promoted up into biros, for example, kids today still kind of get promoted through. They all strive to earn their pen license when they're in about year 5. Up until then, they're only using pencils. So it's still a thing.
Now, what do you think? Because the inspiration for the story was realizing that in the US they needed people who could read cursive to read old historic documents. What are your thoughts about a program of adult volunteers in Australia who could read and transcribe these important documents so then they could be digitized for safekeeping? Do you think we better do that while people can still read cursive?
Yeah, that's possibly while people can still read it. When your other listener said how wonderful it is that she writes letters to her friends, and I do think that is one of the huge advantages of handwriting, whether it's cursive or copperplate or printed. It's just lovely to think that people would still have these, you know, artifacts in their hands rather than, I don't know, lost emails on a screen on an archive somewhere. I know that my emails get archived and disappeared to I don't know where after 12 months. So think of all of those lovely conversations that have been lost.
Also, a love letter surely is always better in cursive, don't you think?
As long as you could read it.
True. But if you can, it would be much more beautiful to get a love letter in cursive than one in print, I think.
Oh, just any love letter would be fine.
I know, I'm being a bit picky, aren't I? I know, just finally, very quickly, I know you're a fan of the fountain pen. Do you still use them?
I love fountain pens, and I've seen many a teacher use them. I was in a school this week where I was noticing a very young teacher with her fountain pen, and I said, wow, you've got a fountain pen. And she said, I love the feel of them on the paper, and they do feel beautiful as they glide across the paper.
Well, Misty, thanks for being my guest to chew the fat on the place of cursive in our modern era on Nightlife tonight.
Thanks for having me.
That's Misty Yadinu, Senior Lecturer in Language Literacy and TESL at the University of Canberra. Thank you. Lots and lots of SMSs coming in about cursive and your experiences with it. We might be able to take a call or two after the latest ABC news.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.